You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Tanya Pinkins. Welcome back for part two of my conversation with Brian Myers Cooper. It was the day of the day after the election.
Oh, the day after. Oh, that one.
That's the vote I'm talking
okay,
about.
Okay, so that vote. Oh, yeah, I know that vote.
That's the vote I'm talking about.
So what you're talking about, the day after the election, I walk in for a 9 o'clock caucus, which is a meeting just of our negotiating team. We weren't meeting with the other side. And we were going to discuss what we had done the day before or just prior and decide how to move forward, what we were going to counter with, what we were going to. And I walked into a funeral home. I mean, yes. people were devastated. People yes. were crying. And I have been keeping this team together and focused and moving forward.
Yes.
For months now.
Yes.
At this point, and
they were just ready to
and
cave.
We had only just gotten to the point where we actually had leverage because the contract was about to expire.
Yes.
So that day, I sat down with our chief negotiator before we sat down and convened. Here's what most people don't know about that was not a one size fits all. Let's screw the public. Let's get all the money we can out of these tiny theaters kind of negotiation. It was a really nuanced approach. And one of the things that set us up, was the fact that New York State had increased the minimum wage by 66% over yes. those 3 years.
So everybody was going to have to go up.
Well, the people at the top, people at the bottom, these tiny theaters like Women's Project. So they were going to have this huge increase, and they weren't quiet. They weren't crying poverty. They weren't saying, oh my gosh, we're going to have to close our doors. I didn't hear a peep from them, frankly. And we were reaching out to them saying, look, we get this. But at the same time as this, the basement is coming up, the sub-basement is coming up, we're not going to allow the top and the middle to then only go up incrementally and then cause wage compression.
Wage compression mean? I'll talk about that and then understand the thing.
You know, if you're all of a sudden going to value people at the bottom 66% more, and then you're going to tell the people at the top they're only going to get at the top tiers at theaters making that had much larger budgets and are much larger operating expenditures, and you're going to tell them that the differential between the bottom tier, which formerly was a minimum wage to a couple hundred dollars more, was all of a sudden going to be like $50, a $50 premium from the bottom to the top tier.
Right.
It was like, no. That's not how that works. If New York State has pushed us into the future where we can finally say that minimum wage is $15, then what that means is those things above that we had already deemed not to be minimum wage need to be appropriately placed above that,
mm-hmm.
and that the people at the top also need to take heed that there is a correction going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're saying minimum wage is going to go up by 66%, I'm saying all y'all's salaries, which in that arena were stagnant and inadequate based on the budgets of those institutions. I mean, the Public and New York Theater Workshop and Signature, they could afford to pay a lot more than they were, but they weren't because they created theaters that had 199 seats, which meant they didn't have to pay any more than that bottom tier.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big goal of mine was to...
And it was successful.
It was enormously successful. I look back and I'm like, wow, we actually did that.
Did something that hadn't been done in 45 years without a strike.
We were very, very close to that.
But we didn't have
but
to.
But we did
no
not
strike.
Have to. We did not have to. And we, although we did not get the numbers that we held on to for so very long, we got bigger numbers than 83%
in 45 years.
83% the percent over 4.5 years. 83%.
And that was the end of both of us on the union.
It was. It was. So I handed, you know, we handed them this huge, huge victory, and a new model for how to look at institutions in a bargaining unit individually, as opposed to just negotiating to the middle and letting the bottom provide cannon fodder and cover mm-hmm. for the middle, and letting the top just sort of wave wherever it
which is ended how up. The rest of the world kind of works, period.
Yeah. And that was not our strategy. We negotiated very hard at the top, and took care of the theaters at the bottom appropriately, because you know they were already getting hit.
See?
And then the middle just needed to be somewhere appropriately in the middle. And we finally did come to that. But how that's not continuing to be the model is sort of escapes me.
Because we're gone. I knew it had to be you, and I had to understand that. It was like, I just knew it was you.
Understandably, there was a lot of fear that day.
I know, but
I mean, I was not aware that you were campaigning behind the scenes, but I talked a lot of people off ledges that week.
Oh, I sent lots of emails. Must have gotten it. I sent it to everybody. Anyways, but then there was no more you and me, and it was like, we were done. We were done, but you care so much still. I don't know that I care so much. I've just gotten mad at my union since that experience.
I care so much about the brave people who do what we do.
I do care about actors.
And if I can make that better, if I can make that easier, if I can... then I feel like I have to, because I have the capacity to do that. I have the capacity to make those changes. I have the capacity to come up with those ideas and implement them. So if I don't, I feel like I'm letting myself down. I feel like I'm letting my family down. My husband's an actor too. I feel like I'm letting you down.
Where does this sense of responsibility come from?
Oh, that farm. Okay. You know, you grow up on a farm, I don't remember a time when I didn't have a life and death responsibility. Mm. I mean, if you don't get up at 5 and go feed your steer, you're in the middle of winter, your steer is cold and hungry and maybe dead. Mm. And you know, you learn that what you say matters, but what you do matters more. Mm. Because I can say I fed the steer, but that doesn't mean the steer isn't hungry unless I did it. You know, so I learned early on that my actions had consequences, and that if people were listening to me, it was my responsibility to be truthful and helpful in any way that I can be.
Is that something you're seeing from your students? Do you feel like that value that you were raised in, you're passing on, and your students are getting it?
Well, they're certainly getting it from me, and I don't know any other way to be that other than generous and grateful. And certainly that's what I experience back most of the time. I mean, I think you find what you're looking for, right? Mm. You're looking for your car keys, you find your car keys. I mean, you may find a lot of things along the way.
I can't agree. I don't know if I can agree with that, Brian. Find a lot of shit.
Well, you find a lot of things along the way, but then you find the thing you're looking for. So if you're looking for generosity and gratitude, then you're going to find generosity and gratitude. And if you're not, that's probably not what you're going to find.
I'll have to think about that. Now, remember, I did call you to a sonnet.
Oh.
Sonnets. Because on your website, it invites us to a journey. Sonnet journey. So tell us about it.
So some years ago, I took a sonnet class at Shakespeare and Company. I did their month-long intensive, which was very intense. By the way, if you ever get a chance out there to go to Shakespeare and Company in the Berkshires for their January intensive, it is well worth your time and the money that you'll spend doing it. But there was a sonnet class taught by Dennis Krasnick, may he rest in peace. And, you know, the sonnets are, because of the structure of the sonnet, those 14 lines, that very strict verse, they are densely packed. Like there's no straying. These things are blocks of stone emotionally and linguistically, more so than the plays. There's a lot more play in the play. There's a lot more freedom in the plays, but these sonnets are just jam packed, and there's no character. You're not playing Beatrice. You're not playing, you know, Coriolanus. You're just you. It's just you. So you know, you really have to bring yourself to the language and to this emotional, you know, bomb that is the sonnet. So you know, we had this class, and it was just part of this curriculum. But I fell in love with them. And about a year later, I lost my voice.
You mean like speaking, singing?
I could barely speak, and I could not sing for about 6 months.
Do you know what the cause was?
Apparently, I dislocated my arytenoid joint in my larynx. I didn't know you could do that, but it froze everything, and it took me...
What was this joint called?
I believe it's the arytenoid joint. It's what holds your... It's the joint that... holds everything together, holds the
folds
together.
And do we
know
how you did this?
Well, it's a physical injury, and I think it had, I think it happened during a workout. But, you know, 6 months of therapy and putting my voice back together, not knowing if I was ever going to act again, not knowing if I was ever going to do anything on
and
stage
do you sing
again.
Too?
I did,
yeah,
I do. Okay. Left me wondering what my future held. And I was like, well, if I can no longer do this thing where I go in and ask for a job and audition and, you know, and do this thing that's dependent on other people picking me, if I want to continue in this industry, I need to find something that is mine. And I went back to those sonnets and thought about how that made me feel. And so I started learning them, which was difficult because I didn't have the range in my speaking voice to really do them.
And you're learning them with the injured, you know, as repair for the voice.
Yeah, as freedom for the voice. I mean,
and what is the process of getting this muscle to work again before we get to the sonnets? How did you get this muscle that's frozen to work again?
A lot of relaxation. So I actually had a vibrator that worked with those muscles and the interlaryngeal muscles, the actual muscles in your larynx that you really don't have control over in a way that, you know, we think of as our biceps, perhaps. So I really had to crack that open and relax that. And then for a while, like I couldn't match pitch. I was off by a third. And my low note was like a low G, like below bass clef, low G.
Wow.
And I was formerly a tenor with a high C. So I lost an octave and a half off my top. So I went to a wonderful, wonderful teacher, Mike Mitchell. And he, over a series of months, just very painstakingly, impatiently put my voice back together.
And what is Mike Mitchell's? What does he do?
He's a voice teacher. I mean, and he was recommended to me by my acupuncturist at the time because I was trying all kinds of things to like open this up, open this this area up, and relax it so that I could really start to use it again. And he absolutely saved my voice. And within three months after I started seeing him, I was auditioning with an operatic aria.
Okay.
When my first audition back singing was actually that. Anyway, the sonnets, that's what I started to do for me because I could do it. And it wasn't dependent on someone picking me. And it was, I didn't know where it was going to take me. And then.
So you made a show of sonnets.
I did. I after I learned a dozen, I thought, oh, you know, I'm seeing a pattern here. And there's a pound of flesh that each one of these sort of demands of you as a speaker. Mm-hmm. And there's a journey. Each one is sort of like a moment in a person's heart life. And you know, those moments, there are 154 sonnets, Shakespeare sonnets, and they're in a specific order. But you know, my heart life did not occur in that order. So I started cherry picking and putting them together in an order that made sense to me for telling my story. And then I started doing that for friends in rehearsal studios that involved flashlights and, you know, being in the dark and people sitting there for an hour listening to me do like 35 sonnets. Mm. I had no idea what I was doing or where it was going. All I knew was that I had to do it and I had to share it. And it was incredibly rewarding. And so, you know, I've gone on to learn almost half of them. My next goal is to do a half marathon, like do 77 curated sonnets in sort of a interactive, get my friends together and put them in a circle and do them that way. But I've gotten a little sidetracked lately, so it's I still have like 12 sonnets to learn before.
Of 154?
Of the 77.
And, oh, okay.
And I have...
Well, you'd be like Taylor Mack and you can do the 24-hour sonnet.
Oh, my Lord. I was listening to your interview with him. And I so regret not being in that audience.
Oh,
my gosh. I can't... Like, it's camping out, basically.
Yeah.
While this man performs for 24 hours... It blows my mind.
Yeah.
Just blows my mind.
It's pretty amazing.
And especially someone like him who has such a vibrant lens on the world that everything is frankly a revelation to for someone as straight-laced and as I...
As blonde-haired, blue-eyed virgin. What was that you said you were?
Young, dumb, blonde virgin.
Young, dumb, blonde virgin.
I haven't quite outgrown that, I guess. I don't know.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
You ready for the three questions?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I'm not proud that I tried to cheat.
How did you try to cheat?
Oh, I went back and I listened to all the episodes.
You thought you would get the three questions.
Jokes on you, Brian.
Yeah, the three questions haven't happened yet. They haven't released yet.
Yeah.
So the even better three though. Questions are. And you know what? I might change them, you know? I've only done it with three people. You're the fourth person I'm asking the three questions. And I think I've done 23 people. So in the scheme of interviews that I've done, yeah. The questions are, who am I? What is needed? And how can I serve?
Oh, my. So the...
Who are you?
Who am I? What is needed? And...
How can I serve?
How can I serve? Wow. It's like you reached into my secret heart and just pulled those out because I wrestle with those every day. I wrestle with not knowing who I am, but accepting manifesting who I am in the world, and unapologetically and sharing wholeheartedly, and who that is evolving as fast as my 2-year-old niece seems to be evolving. Oh my gosh. I watch her and I see myself through a different mirror every time I see her. And sometimes I love what I see, and sometimes I am challenged by what I see. So that's a moving target. What is needed, though, is that I never stop being curious about what that is and who that is. What's needed is that I do not bury or not acknowledge or withhold that which I am from the world. There's only one of you. There's only one of me. When we withhold that from the world, it is a supreme act of selfishness. Mm. That will never manifest in the world in any other way. Mm. And if you're going to withhold it, wow, what a loss. And how dare you choose to inflict that loss on everyone else? Because you don't know. You don't know who you touch or how. So, you know, what is needed and how can I serve that? Wow. So I was brought up to be of service in a lot of ways. And I, for some reason, people have always trusted me. Maybe it's the way I look, maybe it's some energy I give off, but people stop me for directions. People seek me out, strangers seek me out for advice on things, and they seem to think that I'm going to not lead them astray. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for people who know me, people I do have contact with, people who I have always been a source of information and validation and instruction. People trust me. And so living up to that trust was always a struggle when I was younger. I think finding yourself in a position of responsibility that you didn't ask for is a challenge. For me, it was a challenge when I was younger. And finally, it dawned on me that I didn't ask for it, but I didn't ask for, you know, blue eyes either, you know. So you play the hand you're dealt, and if you were dealt this trustworthiness, then you better fucking be worthy of that trust. Mm. So get to work on that. So I have spent a great portion of my life mentoring and teaching in formal ways, but in small ways. You know, a young kid I worked with in summer stock or who came from a school and where a friend teaches in California, for instance, comes to the city, I take them to a little coffee shop and sit down with them for a couple hours and find out where you are, what are you doing, what do you want to do, where are you living, how are you making your living, how are you taking care of yourself, to navigate this SETI so that they can be successful in tackling this thing called the music
paying
show.
Paying it forward, I call that.
And I don't know any other way of being.
Me neither.
Frankly, I just don't. Anyway.
Thank you, Brian.
No, thank you, Tonya.
Oh, it's such a pleasure.
I was so honored to be here.
Well, I had a feeling that you were my other secret posse person in that room with our little silent vote. Thank you for coming and talking to us on You Can't Say That. I'm Tonya Pinkins, and come back.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Say That, the show where you can. I'm Tonya Pinkins, and You Can't Say That is part of the Broadway Podcast Network, produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals. Edited by Derek Gunther, with music by Kat Dale. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast highly wherever you stream. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Tonya Pinkins. And to learn more, visit bpn.fm/YCST. Stay safe.
You is kind. You is smart. You is important. You is dead. Tonya Pinkins' horror film, Red Pill, brings African-American perspective to progressive movement.
We are a majority in this country. And we're going to win the election.
Do you know what the red pill is?
A red pill is someone who infiltrates a group and then destroys them from the inside. This place is spooky.
Some people like to live dangerously.
Gaz, why are you so jumpy tonight?
You know what, guys? I'm gonna go back tomorrow.
Did you hear about the creature woman that attacked a father and son hunting down here?
I don't see the case. This place creeps me out.
I think we should call the sheriff's office.
The only people missing or dead are brown people.
They're after all of us.
What do we do, Amelia?
We die. But we take some of them with us.
Hi, I'm Tonya Pinkins, and I would love to hear from you. You can text me at 917-724-8998. Tell me what you're up to, and I'll let you know what I'm up to. Text me, 917-724-8998. Let's keep in touch.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.